It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, coming up, we're here with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up later in the show, Tim Kazurinski is going to be here. Tim Kazurinski, of course, of Saturday Night Live fame. He was Officer Sweetchuck in the Police Academy movies. He had been writing screenplays he wrote about last night, and if you didn't know that. And he, in the last couple of years, has gone to the stage, and he is now in Broadway, on Broadway in An Act of God opposite Jim Parsons, which, by the way, is the most the highest grossing non-musical week to week on Broadway. Jim Parsons. I say it's Tim Kazurinski, but the papers say it's Jim Parsons. Also coming up, Coach Mike Bray from Notre Dame basketball. Talk about recruiting this summer. Notre Dame, of course, made it to the Elite Eight. They won the ACC. That's a feat. If you think about it, if you're a college basketball fan, winning the ACC means you have to beat Duke. You have to beat North Carolina, Louisville, Syracuse, all those schools, and Notre Dame went to the Elite Eight and lost by a bucket to Kentucky in what was arguably one of the most watched college basketball games of last year. So that's coming up next hour, so we'll talk with those. But first, it's time for the Big Table. It's the 8 o'clock hour. My guest tonight has been redefining work in the workplace in Chicago for years, first with 37 Signals, which was renamed Basecamp. Anyone who's worked in web or digital project management probably has worked with Basecamp. It's a software that organizes, sort of effectively streamlines your team's communications and gets results. It's pretty cool. I've used it. I didn't like the feature that essentially told everyone that I didn't finish what I was supposed to. That was the one thing. They're like, Justin still has some outstanding stuff to do. And I'm like, oh, come on. So I would argue that it's that efficient. But Jason Fried is a trendsetter in Chicago business, an early adapter in the Chicago tech scene. Jason's a TEDx speaker, an authority on the workplace, and the co-author of the book Rework. He's also a contributor and columnist to Inc. magazine. Jason, welcome to the download.
Hey, how are you, Justin?
This is a segment I call the Big Table. It's like a stretch out. We're stretching out. Like
this is a big table, actually.
It's a very big table. It's funny because when I first contacted you, I knew you from before, and I was like, "Hey, 37 Signals," and you're like, "That's not the name of the company anymore." What made the change? What goes into changing a name of a business?
Yeah, so we were 37 Signals for about 14 years or so, since 1999. And we had, over the years, we'd made a bunch of different products. We made like five or six or seven different products, software products, high-rise, campfire, different base camp, whatever. And about 2 years ago, we decided that we got to about 40 people, and we're like, we can't really support all these products at the same level of quality that we want with the same team we have. So do we need to hire a bunch of people, or can we just pull back and not do these other products anymore and just focus on our best product, which is Basecamp? So we decided to do that. We said, you know what? Let's spin off the other products and just focus on one thing, which is Basecamp. Mm-hmm. And then with that, we'll rename the company Basecamp as well. That way, everyone on the inside and the outside knows that this is what we're about. Yeah, it's what we do.
And just to explain, did I explain Basecamp in the right way? I mean, it's a software that's really used for project management, right?
Yeah, so it's a great way for teams and teams who have clients to stay on the same page about what's due when, discussions that have to be made, or decisions that have to be made, discussions you need to have, who said what when, what tasks are due, reminders, that kind of stuff, schedule, keeping all your files and documents in one single place online so everyone knows where everything is, nothing gets lost. That's kind of the idea behind Basecamp.
When you guys started the product and you started Basecamp, what was available at the time in 1999? Was it essentially still the day and age of dry erase boards and the big post-it notes?
Pretty much. I mean, so Basecamp, we started our business in 99 and Basecamp came out in 2004. Between those 2 years, between 99 and 2004, we were a web design company. So we were designing websites for clients. And we were using email, basically, to manage projects. And that was fine for a while. It's okay in the beginning, and then things get messy really quickly, and you don't know who has what.
Anybody who's organized anything on email knows exactly what that's
like. And everyone still does, actually. I mean, email is still the number one way to manage projects and run things. So we were using that. We felt disorganized. We felt like we weren't putting out a professional image. We were dropping the ball. And we looked around for a tool to help us with that problem, and we couldn't find anything. Everything back then was just kind of very old school, an old way of thinking. And so we decided to build our own tool, which we were just going to use for ourselves internally. And what we found out was that as we started using it with our clients, they kept saying, what is this thing you're using? This is really nice. What is this? And we're like, it's this thing we made. And they said, you know, can we use it? And we're like, well, not yet. We don't know. We're just using it for ourselves. And the light bulb goes on. Eventually, you're like, well, maybe we could build this into a product.
Right.
And so we polished it up, cleaned it up a bit, put it on the market, called it Basecamp, February 2004. And about a year later, it was doing more business for us than our web design business. So we stopped doing the web design business and have been doing software ever since.
You know, just in the first 5 minutes, you know, you've talked about the sort of trajectory of 37 Signals into Basecamp. But you mentioned, you know, three or four sort of different things. I mean, you were a web design project. You had a lot of different products. You scaled back to just Basecamp. But it shows a lot about sort of the evolution of starting and maintaining and thriving in your own business.
Yeah. And the thing that's important to note is that even though we spun off these other products, business has actually never been better. So it's interesting because usually a company will consolidate when things are going bad. We wanted to consolidate when things were at their best because I don't want to hit the point where we start to go bad because we have too many things going on at once. So it's just about knowing who you are, knowing what matters to you. And at our company, culture is really important. We have 47 people now, which is relatively small in our industry. A lot of companies have 47 people in a specific companies we're competing against have 47 people in a department or working on one thing. We have 47 people across the whole company. And we don't want 67 or 87 or 107 or 200 just to have that many people. We want everyone's first name. We want everyone to know each other. We want it to feel more like a family. And so that's the deciding factor. That's what keeps our company. That's how we decide what to do. And we couldn't do all these things we wanted to do with that number of people, and we didn't want to hire a bunch more. So we decided the people are the most important thing. Let's scale back our ambitions around everything else and get really ambitious about one thing, which we could all work on together.
It seems like from the get-go with your company, there has been an emphasis on culture. I mean, that essentially is what came out of the book, Rework. But but there was sort of this idea of what kind of, not just what you were going to produce, but what kind of company you were going to be.
Yeah, I've had some bad experiences growing up working at places, and I didn't want to create another one of those places, basically. I worked for like this terribly racist, I'm not going to tell you where it was, but a terribly racist owner of a business when I was much younger. I worked at some other place where a manager was looking over my shoulder constantly. I worked in just terrible places, and I'm like, why would I
like
want to...
sketches, yeah.
Yeah, why would I want to add that to the world?
Right.
So what can I want to work at a place that I'd want to apply to work at, or I want to create a place that I'd want to work at, basically. I want to create the company I want to work for.
It's interesting because 1999, when you guys started a web design company, that was sort of the time when the sort of first bubble kind of bursted, right? Like 2002, a lot of companies didn't make it.
They didn't.
What was it about 37 Signals that kept you on track that, you know, you can be having this interview, you know, 16 years later?
Yeah, we kept the company as small as we possibly can, which is what we still do. So back in 99, we had three people. And there's four. A lot of people we're competing against had 600, 700 people. They're big, huge web agencies that popped up all over the place. And they had enormous expenses and huge payrolls and a lot of overhead. And we had four people, which meant that we didn't need to do that much. We could take a few nice gigs a year and be fine, you know? And we borrowed someone else's office. We kept our costs really low. We just kind of were very lean. And I've always believed in doing it that way. I think you can weather more storms, and you will hit storms. If you're in business for a long time, we've been in business for 16 years. There's been a few storms. There's been that dot-com thing in 2008, the economy kind of fell apart and all that stuff. And you just kind of weather it if you're tight, small, and thoughtful and careful about the way you spend your money. So that's how we've always done it, and I think it's really helped quite a bit.
Well, let's talk more about that culture when we come back. We're talking with Jason Fried. He's the co-author of the book Rework, which kind of looks at life in the office. Also the co-founder and what's your title at Basecamp now?
We don't really have
them. No titles, of course you don't.
If
Why
I had
even
to,
ask?
If I had to have a title, I mean, it'd be CEO if I had to have a title.
Right.
But
if you had to have a title, he'd be CEO.
If I had to have a title.
Basecamp.
Yeah.
Now, Jason Fried is on the big table today. Stay with us. Working this job is a kick in the pants. Working this job is like a knife in the back. Well, you got to tie that off before you throw it away. I'm posting that 100 times. It's a health thing, by the way. It's the download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, we're... tonight at the big table, Jason Fried. He's the co-founder of 37 Signals, which was a company that's renamed to Basecamp. Basecamp, sort of a project management software, is the best way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
which is based here in Chicago. It's you're also the co-author of the book Rework, and we're going to talk about that, sort of like redefining sort of productivity in the office space. It's really interesting to take a look at sort of where we go wrong when we're talking about what work is. When, you know, obviously Basecamp plays into that, because Basecamp as a project management software almost replaces the need for long sort of office meetings. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's part of what it is. I mean, the mm-hmm. great thing is about organizing, like you said, but it really does change the culture of any project you're working on.
Yeah, we're sort of anti-meeting in our company in general. I think a lot of things can just be handled between a couple people really quickly, rather than like gathering a bunch of people in a room for an hour. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that stuff happens over Basecamp. Someone posts a message in, you know, 5 minutes. It's sent out to everybody in the company or everyone who we're working with, and people can get back and respond on their own time and kind of keep that whole discussion on the record, so you can always go back to it later if someone says, I didn't say this or I didn't say that, or if you need to look up something someone said. And it's better than meetings for that reason, because meetings are ephemeral. They kind of go away. You have them and they're gone, and all the knowledge that happened there, they're usually not recorded or transcribed, right, and it's gone. So it's better to have the discussions throughout the day, I think, when they need to be had, rather than gathering everyone in a room and stopping what everyone's doing and doing this for an hour.
And was that were you anti-meeting from the get-go as 37 Signals, or did that evolve as Basecamp evolved?
I've always been against wasting time, basically. And to me, meetings are scheduled usually by the hour, because that's like scheduling software is like by the hour. Like, right, you add a new event and it's like from 8 to 9, that's just how it is. And it's so people end up filling up the time. There's this thing called Parkinson's Law, which says that work expands to fill the time available. And so if you give a project 9 months, it'll take 9 months when it should maybe only take 2 months. And a meeting's the same way. It'll take an hour, even though it should only take 3 minutes, because you have an hour allotted to it. And so many meetings I've been in, I feel like 5 minutes in, you're like, we're done. We're done. But you're not, because it's scheduled and people are there and they have to be heard and all these things. So I've just been against that whole, meetings are one version of it, but I've been against wasting time forever, as far as I can remember.
And Basecamp, that's essentially what it does. I mean, it's kind of limits the amount of time that's allowed for instruction.
People can respond on their own time. You don't have to break everyone's day into smaller pieces, where like a meeting, no matter what you're doing, a meeting says, stop doing it and come over here.
Right. And it's a check-in, right?
Yeah, and that's a huge distraction compared to like a Basecamp or anything. You write something up, and then maybe when you're done with whatever you're doing now, you can get back, you know, you can respond to it in 35 minutes when you're free. So it just kind of it allows people to respond thoughtfully when they have time, rather than forcing them to come over and talk to you right now.
Well, you know, the book Rework, which came out a couple of years back, mm-hmm. you know, it does take on a lot of that sort of around the culture of meetings. And it really sort of, you know, you have the saying about the M&M, the managers and meetings, right?
Right, yeah.
Those are the two things that are stopping work productivity or slowing work productivity. Explain.
So meetings, which I just kind of talked about, are just these things that break your day into smaller bits. So if you have if people think they have an 8-hour work day, well, if you have a meeting at 1, you don't have an 8-hour work day. You have like 4 hours in the morning, then this hour break, and then a few hours in the afternoon. So now your day is broken into two pieces. And if you have another meeting in the morning, you've got three pieces of a day. And your day just keeps getting chunked up into smaller and smaller bits. And it's very hard to actually be creative in really small, short sprints. You know, you need time to think and get into it and develop an idea and just focus, right? Just like sleep. You don't just go to sleep. You have to like, it takes time to get to sleep. And the same thing's true, I think, for work and creativity. You got to kind of get into the zone. And if you only have 15 minutes before the next meeting, you're not going to start getting into the zone. And anyway, and then managers often are just asking you what you're doing all the time. Like, what are you doing? And like, they're looking over your shoulders.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's office space, right?
It's office space. And like, that's a caricature, but not that far.
No, that's why
what people
so
identify
successful,
with it.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's like, I know that guy.
Right.
That guy's my boss. And that's, there are great managers out there. But a lot of managers are all about seeing what you're doing and what are you up to and what are you working on. And every time that comes up, it's a distraction, because it takes your focus away from the work you're actually doing. And so those two things, they're not always bad, but they're often unnecessary, I think.
Well, I've always felt, and you're in the case right now where you manage
a
lot of people.
I'm unnecessary.
Yeah, you're unnecessary. But I mean, there is this, there's no and I think a lot of people listening would probably identify with that, there really isn't a handbook on how to manage. I mean, there is a ton of books, and you know, this is, you read this, HR will tell you to read this.
Yeah.
But there's really no sort of, it's almost like manages its word in itself. Like, you will manage these employees as part of your job responsibilities. How you manage it is almost up to you.
Right.
And that's part of the problem.
Yeah, I think if management is about control, you're kind of going down the wrong path. If management is about support, then things are getting better, I think. And so what we try and do as best we can, we're not the best at this either, of course, is as a manager, I try and help people be better versions of themselves, help people do more than they could do on their own, or help people see something they couldn't see, or help people get unstuck. More so that than sticking people, than getting in people's way, because that's where it goes wrong. So I want to unstick people and remove barriers and help them kind of do their own work, which they're good at, which is why I hired them in the first place.
Right. And it's a hard thing for managers, because managers inherently, maybe they came up through the system and they're like, now you're a manager because you're promoted to that. And so you think like you have all the answers, things like that.
Yeah, or you want to grab some, finally I can grab control. I've been controlled my whole career. Now I can finally grab some control back. And then you just take that out on someone who's right below you, and it just doesn't really work, I don't think, very well. So I've always been a fan of that, of just trying to help people and get out of their way and let them do great work. I also think of myself more as an editor. So I write for Inc., and my articles are better because I have an editor who reads them and helps me through some things and asks me some questions and helps me tighten things up. Mm-hmm. And that's how I see myself, basically, as an editor, the editor-in-chief of Basecamp, where I help people think through ideas and tighten things up along the way.
Jason Fried is the, if he had to have a title, the CEO of Basecamp, but he's also the co-author of the book Rework, which kind of looks at how we work in the office and sort of redefine how productivity can work for you. When we come back after the news, let's talk about the book and about sort of reorganizing. One of the things in the book that I loved was and it was hard to read. The management stuff is hard to read. I just came from a job where I was a manager,
uh-huh.
And everything, I'm guilty of everything you just talked about.
We
except
all are
for maybe the, what's happening, Peter? I wouldn't do that. I would do it, but I do it as a joke.
Right.
And the second thing is workaholics, you know, and the idea of always being on. And that's the thing, and I think in the business that we do here, Pete and I have that problem too, where it's just like there is never a time when we are off. And that was something that I think reading your chapter and how that can actually be more harmful than it's good is something we'll talk about coming up after the break with Jason Fried. Stay with us. This is a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, Beats by Pete Zimmerman. My guest tonight at the big table, Jason Fried. Jason is the co-founder of 37 Signals, which turned into Basecamp, is the name of the business now. Also the co-author of the book Rework, which is really a look at the office and how we are productive. Before the news, you know, we talked about sort of the two M's that are getting in the way of productivity in the office, managers and meetings. You know, but productivity is one of those things that, you know, I think a lot of people will say they're productive, you know, because they have work nonstop.
Right.
Like now in this day and age, you don't leave the office at 5 o'clock, go home and then not think about it until 9 o'clock the next morning. You're constantly on your email. You're constantly on different, you know, chats, things like that. You're always thinking about the next day. So the workplace has expanded.
I heard something recently which I really thought was interesting, which is that busyness is a form of laziness. And what this guy meant by that was that if you're really busy and constantly working all the time, you're being lazy about your choices. You're not deciding what's actually important to do. And there's actually not that much you need to do in a day to do a really good job at it.
Right.
And if you're just busy all the time and feel completely overwhelmed, then you're just not being rigorous about it.
You're just not making great choices.
You're just taking everything on. You're saying yes to everything. And that's really difficult thing to then do well. It's hard enough to do one thing well, and to have to like be on all day long is really hard to do.
And it also, and this is the chapter we're talking about workaholism. It can be harmful to a team, to a collaborative effort to be productive at a job.
Yeah. I think, people are not creative when they're exhausted. They're just not, you know, you're not coming with your best ideas when you're just beat. It just doesn't happen that way. You usually come up with a great idea in the morning in the shower after you've had a good night's sleep and you're rested and like there's your mind is clear. It's not when you're just exhausted. And a lot of these companies, especially in my industry, which is software and technology, they're pushing people 80, 90 hours a week. They're making them pull all-nighters and they expect great work out of them. And I just don't think that's human. It's just not possible. Sometimes you can, through brute force, you can get things done, but you're going to burn out on that really quickly. And if you want to keep great people around your company, you can't burn them out.
Do you see that a lot in your business in the tech field where a lot of young talent that's coming through, they're, you know, programmers, and developers, but they're just getting sort of worked by the companies?
Yes, that happens all the time. And it's hard to complain. I mean, it's hard to feel bad for them. They're making like, you know, 100 grand a year out of college or something like that, right? But at the end of the day, they're exhausted in a few years. And what sucks about that is that they might think that's the only way to move forward in this industry is to be exhausted and tired. And it kind of messes them up because that's not the only way to do it, but they think that's the only way to do it. And that's their first experience, so they think that's how all their future experiences are going to be. And some people are pushed out of the industry who are really good because they're like, I don't want to work 90 hours a week. And you don't have to, actually. You just got to work for different kind of companies. You can't work for the companies that are pushing you that hard. So anyway, there's a lot of that going on. And, you know, everyone wants to be a programmer these days. The programming job pays well, so there's lots of people who are good at it. And so people are afraid if they don't put in the crazy hours and the all-nighters, they're going to lose their job to someone else who wants to do that. And that's, I guess, true at some point. But you also have to decide what's important to you. And if being exhausted all the time is important to you, then you probably have some
problems. Or at least have the understanding that you may have to do that for a certain set, but that's not how this job or this career is going to have to be for the rest of your life.
It shouldn't be. And it isn't. You don't see people in their 30s and early 40s working that way because like, you can't. You can't. When you're 21, you can pull it off. But the problem also is that it you know, people form habits. Whatever they do, whatever you do over and over and over is the habit you form. And if you feel like you have to work 90 hours a week to get anything done, then that's the habit you're going to form. It's going to be very difficult for you to even realize that you can do as much work in half the time if you're more thoughtful about it and you're more careful about it.
You know, it's interesting. We just talked to the kid who does Weekend Update on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yeah.
Colin Jost. He was here last week, and we talked to him about his work life and what it was like. And he talked about being a writer. He started as a writer at 22 years old on Saturday Night Live. And they would do these days where it would start at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday, and their day would end at 11 o'clock on Wednesday. So it was a full-on. And he said that the only people that succeeded at that were the young, like the people who were 22 to 25.
Right.
Anyone who had a family or they checked out. They left the job.
Yeah.
It sounds like that's kind of the tech sector mentality as well, that you have to work a lot when you're young and you put it in. Is that a sort of death sentence for anyone who's like 40, 45 in your business?
It's harder in our business. Yeah, it is. It's definitely a young person's business at some level. At most companies, I don't like that pattern. Maybe it's because I'm 41 now, you know. But I just don't think it's healthy. I don't think it's healthy to burn people out. And one of the reasons why, of course, is because I think that people who stick together over long periods of time can do extraordinary work together because they know each other. It's like a friend. You get to know their little things, little ticks, little stuff that you like, that you don't like, and you know how far you can push someone and how far when you have to let up. And that's how really great things happen, is when you go at each other with ideas and decisions and push, and you know where the limits are because you know someone really well.
Absolutely.
It's like great sports teams. They're great when they've played together for a long time. I mean, certainly you can put together, you know, five amazing start, right? But some great teams, like San Antonio's a great example,
absolutely,
Spurs, right?
Yeah.
Like, same core for a long time. The Bulls were kind of like that, you know, back in the 90s. When you have this really tight core, everyone knows each other, and they can finish each other's sentences. And if you burn people out and they only have a 2 or 3 year run at a company, you're constantly cycling in new people. So you don't have any of that longevity and that deep, those deep relationships that form between people who know each other really well.
You know, a lot of what your book's about is, you know, sort of, and we talked about this with managers in meetings, but just about the rules of the office. I mean, there's like, you know, there's a lot that goes into sort of, you know, the all the different things that you have to do when you go to a space. Yeah. There was a, you know, a push not too long ago by some big tech companies to say, we're done working remote. We want everybody to be in the office. But you've argued in the book and you said that, you know, the office space isn't that important to actually getting work done.
Yeah. So we're a remote company. We have 13 people in Chicago and then about 40 some odd people, 44 people in about 40 other cities around the world. So we're very spread out. So we're very used to working remotely. The company you're speaking about, I think it was Yahoo probably, yeah. is the main example of that, where they said, you know, we're not doing well. There's some people that work remotely. We all need to be together and then we'll do well.
Yeah, it just seemed like a shift in office hierarchy, not necessarily, I mean, just sort of a change in sort of the theory of productivity.
Yeah, it just feels a little backwards to me that pulling everyone back together is where things are going. I think people should be able to work where they're most comfortable during the hours they're most productive and most creative. Further, I don't think that where you work should force you to change your lifestyle. So we have some people who work for us who work on a farm, you know, rural farm, right? Because they love that lifestyle. They could never get a tech job or a great job in their area because they don't exist, but they can work for us. I'm happy to have them. They're fantastic people. We've had someone who lived in Chicago, moved to Portland. Normally that would mean that she'd lose her job, right? Because she had to move cities. For us, it's fantastic. She doesn't lose her job, and we don't lose her. And she can go live in Portland now and do a fantastic job from Portland. And
what do you lose? I mean, as a sort of CEO of Basecamp, what do you lose by not having the FaceTime with these
guys? Yeah, sort of CEO is my title, actually.
I'm giving you new titles every
you know,
time.
There's a situation where when you're together with people, it is better sometimes, right? But we can still do that. There's things called airplanes, and there's things called, like, we can do video conferencing. You can get really close these days to what it's really like to sit in front of someone with video conferencing, or fly them in for a few days and hang out, whatever. You can do all those things. But for the most part, you don't need to be in people's faces all the time. So I'd rather Kristen, in this example, she loves Portland. She's going to be happy in Portland. I want her to be happy. So that's where she should be. And she can still do great work for us from Portland. And her team, she runs a customer service team. She has people all over the world that she runs. There's only one other person who lives in Portland with her. And it's just great. Everything works. You know, but it's cultural. You got to make sure you hire people who can do that and that you have a good core base of people who understand how
that
works.
That's got to be a whole new challenge for you guys to make sure you have people that fit that mindset.
It is. It is. But that's how we hire. So we hire people who are comfortable that way. And there's actually quite a few people who do like to work that way who've never been given the opportunity to do it. And so they can take that opportunity here.
Jason Fried is the co-founder of the company Basecamp. We'll just lose 37 signals. That's just gone.
We're done.
Yeah. We need to bury it. But also the co-author of the book Rework. When we come back, we'll take a quick break. I want to talk to you about, I mean, you're just leading right into a big question of mine, which is, you know, if you could work anywhere and your company is everywhere, why do you stay in Chicago? Don't answer it when we come back. Stay with us.
Yeah. Yo, 6 o'clock every morning, you waking up yawning to the sound of your alarm clock alarm. About an hour from now, you should be at your place of employment, which is annoying because it's so boring. Your co-workers be talking too loud.
So download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman talking about work. Working. Work and talking about work. That's what I'm doing. Jason Fried in studio with me, co-founder of the business Basecamp, and also the co-author of the book Rework. You know, this whole hour I've been talking about sort of the principles of the office. One thing that you guys have to deal with, which is a big part of your job, which is probably unexpected, was customer service.
Yeah.
The idea that, I mean, I've seen what you guys have done, and you had one of your products was a customer service sort of product, but that's a big part of any sort of company that's going to serve up software.
I think it's actually probably the key differentiator, to be honest, because a lot of products over time, everything turns into a commodity, but how you treat people, how you treat customers, how you take care of them, how quickly you respond to them is really what differentiates you from most companies, because a lot of companies just don't care. We care a lot. So we do things, crazy things that people don't do. Like, for example, if you email us 24/7, we'll get back to you within 1 to 2 minutes. A personal response, not an autoresponder, a personal response, we'll get back to you within 1 to 2 minutes.
How do you do that? Is that something that you have someone that's designated, that's your job to do?
Or? Well, we have a customer service team, which we built out. We've made sure schedules overlap. We have people all around the world to cover different time zones.
And it's important because for Basecamp, so people know, it's a project management software. Yeah. If there's a glitch, people get frustrated.
Yeah, of course. And they should. They really should. I mean, if something's wrong, it's our fault. It's not their fault. And people get frustrated, just like I get frustrated with some company if something doesn't go right. So we have to be there for them. We're there, like, people can't even believe that we get back to them within a couple minutes. It's just kind of unheard of. They just don't expect to ever hear back, actually. And when they do hear back so quickly, it disarms them in a really positive way. And they're like, wow, this is pretty amazing. Someone's actually there. Their blood pressure comes down, and then we can have a nice conversation to help them out with the problem that they have. And I think it's so important to invest in that.
Did you learn that? I mean, you by doing, what was it? It was high rise.
Yeah.
That was a customer service sort of client. Like, did you learn from doing that and then sort of absorbing that into Basecamp, how to do customer service?
Well, we learned it because we don't like to get bad customer service ourselves. We're just human beings too. And like, you know, I'm on the phone with some company and it's like 45 minute hold, you know, or you get, finally get to the person and they have no power. They can't do anything. They're like, I can't do that. I'm sorry, sir. Like, you're not actually sorry. It's just like the whole thing's a script and it's terrible, right? And I never want to, again, like I said, I want to create a great company because there should be more of those in the world. I don't want to create bad customer experiences in the product or in the customer service area. So I don't want to contribute to that. I want to make great experiences. I want to show people that it's possible to talk to a company and get service immediately, get really good service, get friendly, empathetic service. I'm frustrated whenever I run into those experiences, and I don't want to do that for our customers.
Jason, you you know, considered one of the early adapters. We talked of the tech scene here in Chicago. You know, we talked. You started 37 Signals in 1999.
Yep.
You withstood a couple bubbles,
yep.
Some recessions, but you are, you know, inevitably you're part of that tech scene, the scene that we talk about here in the media, sort of as the mayor and the city invest more into the scene. What's your take on Chicago's burgeoning tech scene?
Yeah,
as I think someone called in the Wall Street Journal, like was a prairie. Forgot what it was.
Silicon Prairie.
Silicon Prairie.
Yeah, it's stronger than it's ever been, and that's great. 1871's here, and like there's sort of a core thing going on, which is really nice. In 1999 there was nothing really, so I think that's great. The thing I think is bad is when we try and be like someone else. So like this whole idea of Silicon Prairie or trying to be the next Silicon Valley, like no, don't try and be like that. That we're not going to be like that. They're not going to be like us. We got to be ourselves. And so just chasing other cities' dreams doesn't make sense to me at all. So whenever I see that kind of stuff, I cringe at it. I just think Chicago should be a great place to start great businesses that are sustainable, that can stick around for a long period of time. It's not about raising a bunch of money and selling the business quickly. It's like, can we build great companies here that are lasting? I think that's
what Chicago does.
I think it should be what Chicago does. I think that's really an interesting place to be rather than just chase big exits. That's just not that interesting, I don't think.
So for you, I mean, since 1999, you and your co-founders, you stayed in Chicago. We talked in the last segment about how you've created a work environment where you can work remote.
Yeah.
You have people in Portland on farms and 40 different cities all around the world.
Yeah.
Why do you make Chicago your home?
Yeah, my business partner, for example, is in Spain half the year and California almost the other half, and then he's here also sometimes. So I'm from here. I love the city. I know a lot of people here. It's a great place to live. I love New York. I love lots of places, but to live in a big city, I find there's no more livable city than Chicago at this scale. And people are friendly. They're good people here. I just like this place. It's just a great place. It doesn't affect my business. It's not like I stay here for a business reason. I stay here because I like to live here.
But is there an ethos to, you know, being Basecamp from Chicago? I mean, is there like sort of like this city, there's something about the vibe and the energy of this place that like defines who we are?
Well, there's obviously the Midwestern thing, which is like just people work hard and they're down to earth. And I think hopefully that's what our company is about as well. And we're also, you know, we've been around for a long time. We're not trying to like build the company up to sell it. I want to be in business for 20, 30, 40 years if I can be. And to me, that represents like the Midwestern ethic of just work hard and focus and do some good stuff rather than just try and be flashy and, you know, out there. So we align really nicely with that, I think. Yeah. And just people here are just cool. I don't know. It's a cool place. It's a good place.
Well, I'm looking forward to your next flashy and out there idea.
You see my Lambo out there?
Yeah. Get your
kidding.
Lambo right there.
Yeah, right
double
there.
Double parked on Michigan.
Yeah, there it is. Not.
Jason Fried is the co-founder of Basecamp. He's also the co-author of Rework, which sort of looks at the way that we sort of redefining office productivity. Jason, thanks so much for coming down to the studio tonight, and good luck in the future of the work, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for having me on. It was really fun. Thank you.